She can't handle this at all. Excuse me, Taki, gesturing in what she hopes will be the direction of the toilet. I'll be right back. She leaves her Rixons and the laptop bag hanging on her chair and gets up. She still has the napkin in her hand. Sign language with the barman gets her down a tiny hallway and into the least salubrious Japanese toilet she's seen in a while, one of those concrete hole-in-the-floor jobs from the old days. It reeks of disinfectant, and she supposes urine, but it has a door she can get between herself and Taki. She takes a deep breath, regrets it, and looks at the number on the napkin. The ink is spreading into the weave, and there's a chance it will soon be illegible. But then she sees a blue plastic pen left atop some kind of wall-mounted hand dryer. When she picks it up, it leaves a shiny chrome print in a layer of gritty dust. She tests it on the yellow graffiti-free wall, getting a thin line of blue. She copies the number on the palm of her left hand, puts the pen back on the dryer, wads the napkin up, and tosses it into the depression in the center of the floor. Then, since she's there, she decides to pee. It won't be the first time she's used one of these, but it could quite happily be the last. He's gone when she returns to the table, two crumpled pieces of paper money beside the empty beer bottle, her half-empty glass, the ashtray, and the torn envelope. She looks over at the barman, who scarcely seems to register her presence at all. On the red television, insectoid superheroes on streamlined motorcycles buzz through a cartoon cityscape. "He took a duck in the face," she says to the barman, shrugging into the Rixons and slipping the luggage label over her head. The barman glumly nods. Outside, there is no sign of Taki, though she hasn't really expected any. She looks both ways, wondering where she might more easily hail a cab back to the Hyatt.
"Do you know this bar?"
Looking up into a smooth, tanned, evidently European face that she somehow doesn't like at all, she takes in the rest of him, a Prada clone, black leather and shiny nylon, shoes with those toes she hates. Hands grab her from behind hard just above the elbows, pinning her arms at her sides. There's something that's supposed to happen now, she thinks. Something that's supposed to happen. When she'd first moved to New York, her father had insisted that she take lessons in self-defense from a small, fastidious, slightly portly Scotsman called Bunny. Case had argued that New York was no longer as dangerous as Wynne remembered it, which was true, but it had been easier to visit Bunny 6 times than to argue with Wynne. Bunny, her father had told her, had been an SAS man, but when she'd asked Bunny about this, he'd said that he had always been too fat for the SAS, and had in fact been a medic. Bunny favored cardigans and Tattersall shirts, was very nearly her father's age, and told her that he would teach her how hard men fought in pubs. She nodded gravely, thinking that if she were ever set upon by literary types in the White Horse, she would at least be able to hold her own. So while some of her friends explored Thai kickboxing, she'd been schooled in no more than half a dozen moves most often practiced in the maximum security wings of British prisons.